This is Talking with the Gravy Train on Ski Tracks, the latest in Nordic ski talk and news. And now your host, Peter Graves.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Graves. It's another edition of Talking with the Gravy Train. We have Marty Hall on the telephone with us. We're very happy to welcome him, former U.S. ski team coach, former Canadian coach, longtime observer of the Nordic scene, and we're very, very happy to welcome him from his home in New Hampshire. Marty, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure, Peter.
So we'll get right to it. The Olympics are coming up in, just about a week now, and athletes have been preparing at various training locales. I know the Americans have been at Sizer Elm. I actually don't know where the Canadians are have been preparing. Do you know that?
Yeah, same place.
Oh, they are there. So they're both there. Yep.
Just about everybody's there, Peter. And a little side note, I started the North Americans going there back in 1974. I went to a West German training camp in the springtime with Kathy and watched them for a week, 10 days. I was really friendly with the head coach for the German team, George Suter. And from there, George Zipfel took me and Kathy in his little Volkswagen Bug over to the Dachstein, and we went skiing.
So is it fairly close to the Dachstein?
Oh, it's about a two-hour drive.
Okay. Well, I've seen pictures that Liz and Sophie Caldwell have put up on their Facebooks. It looks like a beautiful place. It is at altitude, isn't it?
It is. That's the reason everybody's there. And I can tell you, I talked with John Farrer about 3 years ago because the Americans had missed going to altitude training camps before the World Championships in particular years in the Olympics. And I said they were missing the boat and this was a great place to go. And they have finally, I think maybe 2 years ago, went there.
About how high is it, Marty?
You can go up to and ski on really good tracks. And they have a big loop up at 7,000 feet.
Okay.
They can, and Peter, within like 3 kilometers, 4 kilometers, they can go all the way back down to 4,500 feet.
And no kidding.
At Sizer Elm, they cannot hold World Cup races because it's too high, but you just go over the hill down to Valgardena. There's a place down in there called Panna, and they have a racing stadium, a homologated system, trail system, and it's actually in the 80s, they held the first mass start 30K skating race here, and the first, second, and third places were Ulvang, Spahn, and Harvey.
Wow. Wow. Yep. Well, it sounds like a great spot. So, I know very few people, Marty, that keep their ear to the ground on the cross-country sport as much as you do. You're a voracious reader of the internet and a commentator on the sport. What sort of things are you hearing? And I'm speaking in general now, not necessarily nationality-based, but what kinds of things are you hearing, can you tell us, about the cross-country coming up in Sochi?
Well, it's... From my point of view, there's a number of interesting things going on. Number one, they've expanded the schedule so that there's a two-day break, a three-day break, and another two-day break in the cross-country schedule.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole week of time off. So it's possible, Peter, for some athletes to consider running every event. There are 6 races in the, however many, I think it's 16 or 17 days. This is unheard of. It's a new step. I don't think anybody really has picked. I'm sure they're talking about it. But I know there are some athletes. Northug has said that he's going to try and do all 6 races.
Really? Yeah.
It's a yeoman's job, I'll tell you. But the other thing, too, is even with these breaks, when the athletes are skiing there, in other words, the men one day, the women another day, that's an extra day off. So it's an expansive schedule, and it's going to be interesting to see how different people take advantage of it.
That's interesting. Do you like that concept then?
I think it's cool.
Yeah.
Sort of like a mini tour de ski. I mean, except that it's the Olympics, of course. But it throws another dicey thing out there for people to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Someone like Colonia, who's coming back from an injury, I think it's off the schedule for him. But he's some kind of a man. I'll tell you, when it comes to being able to race and race and race and race. He's a pretty efficient machine.
Yeah, indeed so. Marty, you were the head coach for the cross-country team in 1976 when Cokie won his silver medal in the 30K event. And I guess, you know, there's been an awful lot of talk, particularly in the U.S., but also if you factor people like Alex Harvey and some of his early season performance, as perhaps Devin, do you see North American medals in our future here?
Oh, definitely. If they were to come away from these Olympic games without between the two teams without five or six medals, I'd be very surprised. I mean, so Alex, skis both techniques very well, has a great feeling for the sport. I don't know if it has anything to do with his. His dad was a hero back in the 80s, won World Cups and all that, and I don't know how much has been passed down, but I know physiologically, between mom and dad, they turned out a pretty good machine, and he can. I don't think there's any event that you can count him out of.
Mm-hmm.
So whether he can ski that many, who knows? Keegan, I can see her producing two medals, one in the team sprint relay, two people racing, and then of course in the freestyle. Sprint that she's the odds-on favorite. I mean, she's won that title for the last 2 years over the, you know, the length of the season. She comes out of there with the glass globe, which is, I think, a dream of every racer. I'm not sure whether she would rate it higher than a gold medal, but by gosh, I'll bet you it's real close.
Yeah. It must be very incredibly satisfying to you, who's been such a part of the scene, to see that we go in both countries into an Olympic Games where we may be favored even. That, we haven't always enjoyed being approaching the Games from that point of view.
Peter, you know, you'd like to feel that what you did those many years ago have helped to, you know, expand the base and make things, you know, just hack away at that big block of stone that you're trying to knock down so that you can get those goals. You'd like to feel that you were a builder, and the programs you put together were part of what's going on now.
Yeah. I mean, this may be too broad a question. We probably could spend hours on it, and maybe we should at some point. But how do you think we got here, Marty, to this point where both teams are strong?
Peter, I think if I was to say one thing, if there was drugs,
mm-hmm.
drugs that are being used at an all-time low right now,
mm-hmm.
opened up a lot of doors. I can tell you from my experience and things that have happened since the 70s when I first realized drugs were being used. Not that I could say, oh, you're doing it and you're doing it and you're doing it, because at that point we were so far behind in regards to tracking these criminals, if that's what you want to call them,
mm-hmm.
people down. But, you know, the thing that makes me bitter is, and very little of the talk about drugs is about the people who don't use the drugs.
Right.
They've been robbed.
In a way,
yeah.
One might say both countries were much better and much closer to the top than we ever really knew.
Oh, and the other thing there, Peter, is the people who give you the money evaluate your program and say, oh, well, you're not doing very well. Well, so then you don't get the money, you don't have the program, it's that much harder to build.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's. I mean, I just feel so sorry for those athletes in those years, and you know, you're talking from the 70s into the early 2000s
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That drugs were, and the other thing is if I knew it, because I talked to a lot of people, and that's how I got my information.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the people who are running the sport knew it.
Yeah,
and that made me also feel bad because they weren't taking the necessary steps.
Yeah.
One of the guys that I would put a finger on as to having taken the steps would be Dick Pound from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what he did and how he spoke out and the actions that he took with WADA hurt him in regard to becoming the president of the IOC.
Yes, yes, very likely. I think that's true, Marty. I mean, not that I want to get into this greatly because time is short, but I was with you in Calgary. You made some very profound announcements to the media. I don't think you regret that ever, do you?
Not a bit.
Nope.
I'd do it again. I'd do it in a second. And you know, the confirmation, obviously, really, this is a stupid confirmation, but a day later, maybe 2 days later, we're driving our van down from the race site, from the venue, down to the village, and we stopped to pick up a Norwegian girl. Her name's Annette Bo.
Mm-hmm.
And to give her a ride down, she was thumbing her way down. She'd missed her ride, and she jumps in the van, and she sees me in the back seat, and she just hurdles herself into my lap and says, "Oh, Marty, you SOB, the guy we've been waiting for. Oh, I can't believe it. Kiss me all over the place, hug me." I said, "Boy, did I do the right thing, huh?"
Yeah, yeah, indeed.
Anyway, I can tell you it made me nervous.
Sure.
I didn't want to lose my job. That was the big thing. But I just had enough. And I had spoken to people in the Canadian hierarchy of sport in Canada.
Yeah.
And they snuffed me.
Yeah.
Snuffed me bad. And I didn't like it. I didn't appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah.
So here I was crying for help.
Yep.
You know what? What happened in the summer of 88? Ben Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Got caught at the Olympics in Seoul. Big inquiry in Canada. Spent millions of dollars ferreting out all the drug users,
yeah,
Kicking people out of the sport. And, you know, so it was happening. It was there. And that would be one of the big things. One of the other things I think that's helping the growth of the sport in this country is in these countries, Canada and the U.S., is the social media.
Mm-hmm.
Communicate. I mean, you can find out anything you want to find out now. I mean, you can go get videotapes of the... I mean, the Russians were always secretive. Now you can go get videotapes of them weightlifting, running, training, skiing, technique. I mean, there are no secrets anymore. And the other thing is this gets communicated to us over here because the game is over there.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not so far behind in regards to that kind of information. Plus, now that our kids are doing so well, that you know they get to read about what all these guys are doing, how they do it, get to talk back and forth, exchange information, and so they're smarter, they're more confident when they get into the game, and way ahead. We've closed a big gap in regards to communications and information.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember there were things of lore and legend that were passed down, I think, in Mike Gallagher's sauna and places like that where, you know, we all waited with bated breath to hear what the latest news was that was, you know, 6 months old from Norway or something. But
got it.
And, Marty... let's talk about some of the international competitors here. A number of people, pundits in the sport, have said that if Bjorgen stays healthy, she'll be the dominant woman skier. What do you say about that?
It's starting to show some chinks in my estimation.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't had the greatest early season. And as a matter of fact, she kind of disappeared. And it hasn't, you know, we haven't seen her in a while. They had their national championships. But right now, I think the women's thing has... kind of opened up, and maybe Therese Johaug is ready to make that step, and all of a sudden she's shown some sprinting powers. You know, she's before this year she hardly ever entered the sprints. Now she's in the sprints and scoring points, and this makes her a better overall racer for being the new queen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think earlier this year she said she felt that in an interview, Johaug was really gaining ground on her. And, you know, not that she was concerned, but she noted that in a rather complimentary way. But there are others, too. Kowalczyk will be very tough. I suspect the Russian women will be strong. The Swedes with Kala and others are strong. And of course, particularly of note coming on this year have been the Finnish women.
Oh, boy, they...
I've been a bit surprised.
And not one, two, three, but four.
Yeah.
So they've got a tremendous amount of depth. And you missed the name, Peter.
Tell me.
Keegan Animal.
Oh, absolutely. That goes without saying, in my opinion. But you're absolutely right. Absolutely right.
But the other thing, too, is take a look at the group that you named. Kowalczyk, not a sprinter.
Yep.
Okay? But a classic lady, not a skater. I mean, you keep going like that, and all of a sudden... there's a lot of holes or a lot of events that are open to a lot of different people now. And I think things will get spread around because of just the pressure of it being the Olympics.
Yeah. Marty, how about the men? I mean, Northug goes in as very strong. Colonia's got to be a question mark. I don't think he got back on snow until maybe sometime in November. But what are you hearing about some of the elite men?
Okay, well, you know, there's the Russians.
Right, of course.
The Russian men, you notice we didn't mention any Russian women. Their program right now is in a downturn, fairly weak. The Russian men, very, very strong, and they cover everything, skating, classic, res, sprinting, distance. So you have to look at any number of those guys, and I won't endeavor to undertake all the names.
Right.
Okay, they're just hard enough alone,
yeah.
One at a time. Anyway, Colonia has come back. He's now racing. He's raced two or three races, and he's looked very good. And, you know, he's a methodical guy, you know, not that I know him, but it's the way I see him carrying and dealing with the sport. Very solid everywhere. There isn't a thing he can't do. It's just a matter of if he's had enough racing to bring that threshold of, you know, the competitive edge, his physiology, and of course, his, the mental aspect of racing back up to, you know, the international level, because the racing he's done has been more in his country and not of the elite level, but first race was a third, and then after that it's been all first. And Northug had a really sketchy beginning to the year, started to look a little better as we got closer to the end of the Tour de Ski and some other races. The Norwegian team is just loaded.
Yeah.
I mean, it just blows you away. I mean, they just had the Marcia Longa, 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. I mean, just anywhere in the sport right now, their men and their women, it's not just a Norwegian winning or a Norwegian woman winning. It is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 sometimes.
Yeah.
Just amazing. Just amazing.
Yeah, and there are lots of other countries. I mean, I think of Magnificat of France, for example, as just being one. But Lucas Bauer of the Czech Republic and Marcus Hellner of Sweden. There are a lot of people who could go for individual medals there.
And the other thing too, Peter, is the support. Picking the right skis, picking the right wax. Those guys, the technicians. Definitely earn their money. I have a feeling that conditions could be tricky because of the location of Sochi, with the ocean, the Black Sea, the temperate climate down below. I mean, it just blows you away when you think that you take the tram back down to the bottom, and there you are, palm trees.
Yeah, yeah, it is amazing.
You know, you take the tram up, and 3 feet of snow.
Yeah.
Snow has to be moisture laden, you'd say. So that when you have moisture in the snow, snow is moisture, but it can have higher levels of moisture or lower, drier, wetter. The wetter it gets, the harder it is to wax, harder it is to pick skis for, harder it is to pick structure for. So that becomes a real dicey situation in regards to helping pick the winner. Because when you stand on the start line, there are only two things you have to worry about, your brain and what it's going to get out of your body, and your skis. And if you don't have the skis, forget it.
Yeah. We've certainly seen plenty of examples of that in recent history, haven't we?
Yeah, we sure have.
Yep, and it's pretty graphic when
it
happens.
Facts, and when we get around the 0 degrees, 32 degrees, where the snow is in a freeze-melt relationship with the climate, waxing becomes very, very dicey. And when it snows there, it snows.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's... You can get some pretty big storms. And the other thing is they blow in and blow out. So you could have a race like a 50K, and the guys who start early have no snow, and all of a sudden it's snowing. The whole race changes.
Yeah. Now, I'm about to leave for Sochi, but I've never been there as of yet. And my guess is that it's pretty temperate, a little bit like what we saw at Whistler.
You got it.
Yep, yep.
A lot that was learned there can be used again, I'm sure.
Yeah. Marty, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I remember Gerhard Teller telling me one time, Peter, the technology never stops. Of course that's true. Do you Do you have a sense if there's something new and sort of secretive that's about to come out here by way of equipment or wax or anything like that from what you've heard?
Peter.
And I don't want to put you on the spot, buddy.
You're not going to put me on the spot because it really can't happen.
Yep.
Okay, because if it's not available to everybody, it's not available.
Okay, that's the FIS rules require that then?
Got it.
Yeah, okay.
If, you know, one of the places you probably could sneak stuff through would be in the waxing.
Mm-hmm.
No way you can check.
Right.
I mean, what's in a tube? Who knows? I mean, in the old, even way back in the old days when we didn't have this a lot of this technology, people would go to the taking one color wax and out of a blue tube and putting it in a red tube, you know, to throw people.
Yeah, yeah. I remember hearing of those stories. You're listening to Marty Hall live on Talking with the Gravy Train. I'm Peter Graves. Glad to have Marty with us. Marty, I understand the trails in Sochi are very tough. Again, haven't seen them, but from the comments I've heard from the athletes, there are some sustained climbs.
Courses built for who?
World class.
These guys are big into weightlifting. If you were to see them, Peter, every one of them, you wouldn't. I don't know why their women haven't been able to do the same thing, but their men are definitely big into weightlifting.
Mm-hmm.
Weightlifting has been a big part of this sport ever since I got into it. My first trip to Sweden, Kiruna, Sweden, back in 1972 or 3, we were in Kiruna, Sweden. Went into the weight room there, asked the guy, I said, what's those things? That thing, oh, that's the East Germans left that here. That's a rollerboard for double pole strength. And I said, well, how good are they at lifting? He said, every one of those guys can bench press 100 kilos, which is 200 pounds.
That, gee.
That's big time lifting. If
yeah.
you see those Russian guys, they are all built.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they are stacked.
Yeah.
Courses that are built for them. And the other thing, Peter, what goes up? Must come down.
Uh-huh.
Downhills are good. Hard.
Hard, yeah, yeah.
Twisty, yeah.
yeah. I mean, I don't know where it began. My recollection is that the courses at Calgary were really extreme. But I guess you could say that in Lake Placid, too, in 1980, the talk of Russian Hill, you remember all that stuff. I mean, each year they seem to, am I correct, they're getting a little tougher?
Well, these guys are stronger. You know, when I was doing the trail system in Thunder Bay, Doug Koss from the homologation committee, he was chairman, came over and he says, Marty, be careful. This is, you got to keep the rhythm. You have to have, you don't want them herringboning everywhere. Those guys ran up everything.
Yeah.
Okay, and it seems to be, you know, you very seldom see anybody's herringbone.
Yeah.
Just a wax or something like that. But it seems like as they're having. Right, I would say in the last 5 years, maybe 10 years, they've had to build the courses harder to keep up with what the athletes are doing with their training.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Marty, I want to focus for a second on the U.S. women's relay team because a lot of people I've talked to certainly think they are a real shot for a medal, and I think they are.